So Bert was telling us a story about how he used to work at the residential school where a bunch of white kids would address him as the N-word after listening to Chappelle's show. You can hear Pork Therapy every Friday night here on the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM. And we've got a guest with us, Brett. Hi, Brett.
Hi.
I'm sorry. I didn't turn on your microphone. That was a fail.
Hi. That sounds so much better in my headphones.
He does this to hear the sound of his own voice.
Right. No. Well, who doesn't, you know?
That's true. That's why I do it.
So, hi, Brett. You're from the School Sucks podcast.
We've
worked together many times in the past.
So you are one of the most frequent voices on my show.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. I would have thought, Lorette Lynn was a frequent voice on your show, right? Has she been on more times than me?
Nope. It's probably, aside from my co-hosts, and I consider you a co-host more than a guest because, you know, but Wes and then you.
Cool.
Actually.
Sweet.
Because I put up all our free talk live stuff. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. So Brett does the School Sucks podcast, schoolsucksproject.com. I think that a lot of people who listen to Pork Therapy also listen to School Sucks.
Yeah. That's great.
I think there's a lot of crossover between, you know, the shows that we do, even though they're very different and unique, you know. A lot of Liberty podcasts are like that. You know, you would think like, oh, there's all these people. There's just this community of podcasters all doing, you know, shows about freedom. How individual could they be? Like, aren't they just repeating the same old shit over and over again?
Yeah.
Right. But I don't think we are. I mean, I think that everybody really has a pretty unique take on things.
Yeah. It's gotten to a point too. Like I remember years ago, I said to everyone, I said, start a podcast. Now do your own. Now I'm like, stop doing podcasts. Not enough people are listening to my podcast. They're listening to yours. Not yours, but you know, like the podcasts of the people that I encourage to start.
Right.
So I
stole all your listeners, both of you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you have a podcast now that I hear is very good.
Sovereign Tech.
Yeah.
That is
sovereigntech.com. Restitution. No, just kidding. Totally kidding. That's the way podcasts are. Like, the way I view it is like, it's there for people who want to listen. And I'm really glad that people do listen. And by all indications, they do, right? Because I'll go to something like this and people will say, hey, I listened to your show. So, okay, I take that as a good sign. But I don't think anybody has an obligation to listen.
No.
Even if they're my friend or whatever, you know?
And I expect, I've been listening to a lot of the Joe Rogan show, which is a very good podcast.
Is that the Joe Rogan Experience?
Yeah, I highly recommend it. Everybody stop listening to my show. Start listening to Joe Rogan. I know that kind of contradicts what I just said. But no, Joe Rogan's really good, and he has a lot of comedians on. And comedy is an interesting art form, but he was talking to... I think he's had this conversation with a bunch of different people where he says, some fan comes up and says, oh, I liked you when you did this, or I liked it when you were in this phase. And, you know, I think that, whatever kind of media you're producing or whatever kind of art you're involved in, you're going to shed your skin of listeners eventually and new people are going to come in.
Yeah.
And I forget that sometimes, like I talk about my show, like, everybody who's listening to the current show has heard everything I've ever done. And I'm like, oh, sorry, everyone. I know I said this before, you know, 2 years ago. And just to stop doing that and just to welcome new people. Because, I mean, I guess there's no reason why more people couldn't be coming in today than that was the case years ago, 2009, 2010. So,
yeah.
So are you saying something like, you know, pretend that your show doesn't have so much like historical fact to it or... I'm not explaining this well, but you're saying you said how you would think back and you'd say, you know I said this 2 years ago, but act like they're just listening to it now and that you don't have to justify being there 2 years ago. Is that?
I think I'm putting too much thought into it. Like,
gotcha.
I'll think about every show. Like, okay, if somebody, this is the first show they're listening to, right? So like we had Derek J on a few months back, lots of people heard the show. Lot more than like 3-4 times more than the average podcast gets. So when a show comes out, I was like, will somebody be able to pick up the broader context of what we're doing here from just this show? So
right.
I try to, you know, I always try to be conscious of like putting in a few lines because the show is kind of chronological.
Right.
You know, so like there would be things that maybe wouldn't make sense if you were just brand new to this. So I think it's important to try to put some kind of introductory aspect, like something that you might not have to do or something that like Free Talk Live might not have to do because it's a show that deals with issues as they come through, pretty much. Yeah. Or topics. But
you know, I think our styles are really different, Brett, because like I feel very overwhelmed when I think of the prospect of, okay, I'm going to put together a comprehensive show about a specific topic, one topic, and I'm going to lay it all out in this one show. And I just get so overwhelmed when I even think of doing that, that I just don't. And so I prefer to go at things a little more piecemeal or eclectic, I guess. Like I like my shows to have, you know, lots of different topics, right? Maybe we switch every segment or every couple segments or something like that. But, you know, I know that you, I think, like the shows that focus on just one thing and try to do them really well and cover them well. And I appreciate that. But, you know, I noticed one of the things that you've been talking about recently was just this like tension you felt of like you wanted to do some silly shows, right? Like almost like the Wheels Off Liberty.
I'm a very silly man, and I feel like the structure of this show restrains that a little bit too much. And
so how do you think you're going to deal with that?
Well, we've just you know, started to segment how we do things into like, all right, this is a serious show. But then when we were on LRN for a long time, so we would have to do 8 serious segments that were topic driven, hopefully caller and conversation driven. But then I realized that we were doing Ustream simultaneously. So we still had the stream running after LRN and all their rules took us off, you know, so we could do whatever we wanted to after midnight. And we produced some of the most entertaining content. Now it's terrible and it's offensive and it's like, it's childish, but, some of the most fun I had was doing things that people who only listen to the podcast have never heard.
Right.
And that served a lot of purpose. It was a good outlet, right? Like I really used to like to do Wheels Off Liberty. Because it was totally stupid, but it was so much fun, you know? And you just can't, like...
So what do you think is fun? Like, what's fun for you about doing a show like that?
I don't know what it is. It's like some kind of... it's a totally appropriate arena to behave in a way that it's not appropriate at all for a 35-year-old man to behave in anywhere else. And, you know, that was one of the things about, like, these Pork Fest events... That it's just this chance to let, because I think everyone wants to, right? We all want to get silly and weird, and there's nowhere to do it, I don't think, you know? I mean, I couldn't do it at work.
Yeah.
Especially at work.
Yeah, you can't get silly with...
So, and you work with kids, right? So you can get silly in a way, but not like an adult way.
Not like in an adult way.
Yeah.
And I had... You know, all these experiences where I worked with kids, and I used to work in schools where kids had wound up in these schools. They were like alternative schools or residential schools because they challenged the authority of the public schools that they were in. And I really had to hold myself back because they were so funny, the stuff they would do. And they would swear. This was the story that I really would love to tell. It was 2006, and I was working in this school in Vermont, and the kids loved to mimic stuff that they saw on TV. And the things that were on TV, the biggest things on TV for these kids at the time, were South Park and the Chappelle Show. Mm-hmm. Right. So I would be at home at night watching Chappelle on the floor laughing. Right. And then I would stop for a second. And I would say, oh, work tomorrow is going to suck. Because my job as the authority figure was to kind of rein in that behavior. Yeah. So kids would come in and they would address me with the N-word, you know? And I had to, I
You're
said,
a white
you know,
guy, by the way.
Yeah, I'm one of the whiter men. Yeah, sure. And
blue eyes.
But I'm actually kind of dark compared to this blonde boy with a flannel shirt and jeans that looked like he was gardening in them. This was Vermont.
Who's calling you the N-word? We'll be back with more. Brett, if you
thank
can
you.
Stick
yes,
with
yes,
us,
I'd
yeah,
love
that
to.
Would be great. Yeah, I have some other stuff I wanted to ask you about,
sure.
too. So more Pork Therapy is on the way from Liberty Forum 2013. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Pork Therapy, live from Liberty Forum 2013. We are in Nashua, New Hampshire, and so glad to be here. It's been really fun this weekend so far, and it's like most of the weekend is remaining to be enjoyed. So Catch my website, porktherapy.com, porctherapy.com, to get the archives of all my old shows, including this one. It'll be up as soon as I am able to post it. And I've got Brian with me here Hello. Tonight, too. I'm Stephanie, your host. And we've got Brett Vinat, too.
Hi. Hi,
Brett.
Hi.
So you were...
I thought it was Bert Vinert.
Yeah, okay, we've got Bert Vinert here today. Okay. So, hi, Bert.
Or my garage.
So Bert was telling us a story about how he used to work at the residential school where a bunch of white kids would address him as the N-word after listening to Chappelle's show.
Yeah, yeah. So this story, this anecdote was part of a larger point. But I can't remember what it is, and I'm not sure if it matters anymore.
I think we were talking about humor and like what the appeal of...
Not having an outlet for it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like you had to rein them in, yeah. Or that was your
like
job.
You want a place where you can talk about an MMF.
Yeah. So you know that feeling when... You know that feeling when you want to laugh and you have to stop yourself because, I don't know, you're at a wedding... Or a funeral or something, like some situation where it's inappropriate to laugh and it feels like something comes out of your ears, like because of the pressure. I was in these situations in school all the time where yeah. I couldn't respond to them in that way, even though if it was me and my friends. Like I was saying, I'd watch Chappelle at night and be like, this is amazing. This is the funniest thing I've ever seen. But then it would immediately dawn on me that the next day at school was going to be terrible because I was going to have to redirect... kids in flannel shirts calling me the N-word.
Yeah.
And if you're just joining us, I am white. So what we eventually had to do was I didn't have the outlet there that I wanted. So what we did was, this is again, a story I'm sure I've told on my show, was come up with our own cursing language. Where we made up words,
mm-hmm.
right?
Is this like frack and Felgerkarb?
No. This was okay. Like we had Bzerbiak. That was one. Bzerbiak was any man. They had real specific definitions. It was quite a vocabulary.
I already feel offended.
It was like you know the cop, like a big kind of Chicago cop with a mustache.
Sure.
So like. Wears a uniform to work, has a mustache, weighs over 250 pounds. That was a Bzerbiak. But it was like was like something you could call your friends, like cut it out, you Bzerbiak.
Okay.
Cornbird was another one.
I remember that one.
Cornbird.
Cornberg.
Cornbird?
Cornbird.
I've told you this?
I've heard it on your show, I think.
Oh, man. I got to come up with new stuff.
Well,
I'm sorry, everyone. I'm so sorry. Yeah, but this, the kids, the best one, the one that actually was the most fun for me and them was Bass.
Bass.
Yeah, because it was kind of like, what's the language for this show? No F word, I guess, and anything else is okay?
I don't really know. I don't have much of a policy.
Well, we could probably say bastard, right?
Sure.
Okay, yeah. And ass. And bastard kind of, or bass could go either way. Like
right.
You could be ass or bastard mm-hmm. with bass. So they really liked bass. They liked to call each other bass. But that actually worked really well, but that was obviously limited. And I couldn't have the fun with them that I wanted to. And that's like, you know, as I look back on my career, like one of the biggest regrets is that I had to be this authority figure when these kids, these kids were so smart because they had that wit, you know, when you, that like that kind of wit and creativity, when you know people are smart, but they just suck at school because they hate it and they don't want to be there.
Yeah.
So
I imagine a part of you could really relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And the only way that they could really express themselves were things that they were always being told not to do, things that they were always being told were inappropriate.
Yeah.
And I had to like be the police in that.
Yeah.
And that really sucked. So maybe like the things that we did on my show when we went into Silly Hour, that was all that pent up stuff that just had nowhere to go. And
yeah, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, or maybe I'm just a silly man, you know? Maybe I'm just a silly guy.
Well, did you get that too when you were a kid? Like when you, you know, obviously you're a smart person.
Sure.
And I'm sure you were smart as a young person. And so I'm sure that wit came out of you as well and was quelched as it always is when kids are in school.
I don't know. I feel like my mom encouraged it. Like she thought I was funny. My dad never really thought It was funny. He's kind of like, what's wrong with you? You're my son. You know, why are you dressed up like Michael Jackson? Why are you doing? Why are you parading around our development? My son dressed up like Michael Jackson. That's like you're awesome. Doing your own silly parade through the neighborhood. You're 8 years old. You know, you should be playing football.
Just say that wasn't me. That was Bert.
But my mom got a kick out of me and still does to this day. You know, she thinks I'm very funny. So, but yeah, I obviously in school, yeah, you couldn't do anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it must have sucked to realize that, okay, that was done to you and you didn't like it. And then you ended up in this role where you were doing this to other kids.
Yeah.
It must have really sucked.
Yeah. That was very, I mean, at the time, like when you're in that environment every day, it's mm-hmm. just like, oh, these kids, you know, I mean, that's really how I felt like 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
And before that, you know, at the more intensive school that I worked at, it was probably worse, you know? Now I understood that they were victims, obviously, mm-hmm. but there was a lot of encouragement from people who had been in these jobs longer than that to be like, don't be soft on these kids. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to manipulate you. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a thing too. When you don't feel like you have a lot of assets, mm-hmm. you can turn into a more manipulative person because mm-hmm. you might not feel like if you're beaten down your whole life by abusive parents or an abusive system or being in, you know,
then it becomes a matter of survival.
And you don't feel like that kind of those environments don't make you feel like you have a lot of personal assets. Yeah. You don't have a lot of bargaining chips.
Definitely.
And those are usually the people that become the most manipulative. So there was some truth in that, that the kids were manipulative and they knew how to get what they wanted to.
But you know, how can they're always treated like they're not able to be trusted, right?
Yeah,
and so how are they supposed to grow up into a person who can be trusted, right? When they're always being told that they can't.
And that was the one intervention that I had in that whole part of my career that I was proud of. I said, where are these kids going after this? Jail, some kind of insane asylum? And they're like, no, they're going back into the real world. And I said that we need to stop preparing them for jails and insane asylums.
Right.
Because they were being treated like rope. The way that they were being treated at the campus where I was the lead teacher was horrifying. I don't know what it would be like for me emotionally to go back today and see that. Obviously, in 2002, when I started that teaching job, I knew a lot less and was probably tolerant of a lot more. You know, because I was trying to work my way through there, and I assumed as a young kid out of college that the people who ran that school probably knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. You know, and if I felt like this isn't the right way to treat people, it's probably because I can't see the big picture. I mean, I think those are the kinds of stories. Maybe, I mean, I don't want to project, you know, my short-sightedness onto everybody, but I think a lot of people come out of college and they're very obedient and they're kind of thoughtless.
Absolutely. Well, and most people end up in careers like that where they have some real questions about what they're doing, but they don't have the courage to leave. And so then, you know, years go by and they become one of those, you know, higher level people who's enforcing it on the younger ones. Oh, you have to do what you're told, you know, or else you'll never make it in this business or whatever.
Yeah.
So I can really see that happening. And I'm glad that you did have the courage to get out. You know,
yeah,
I just want to know, have you ever heard from any of those kids that were like alums of the school that have heard your podcast or anything?
I did. One girl contacted me. This is a story on Facebook when she was about 21.
Okay.
And wanted to have kind of an internet romance thing going. And that was not appropriate.
Yeah. So you weren't into that.
No, and I thought about the ethics of it, you know? Like, I was maybe 29, 30 at the time, mm-hmm. and I had to, like, be like, would this be, if this was something that I wanted to do, I mean, she lived, like, you know, other side of the country or something, but I was like, if I wanted to do that, would it be okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like when a relationship forms where you are in that position of authority, I forever remain this kind of person.
There's always a power dynamic.
And that would be a very, and she was a nice girl. She was really smart. Like I taught history. She really cared about history. She mm-hmm. took notes, which I was real into at the time. People taking notes when I talk.
Why was she attracted to you? Because of your podcast or because you're being a teacher?
She, I don't even think I was doing the podcast then. Gotcha. I think she maybe just thought I was a, you know.
Hot teacher.
Yeah.
All right, Brett. Well, there's more coming up. Sex and Science Hour
Thank you.
Is up next. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right.
It's Pork Therapy.